5, 6, 7, 8. We're back.
Yes, we are.
Okay. And in today's episode, we're going to be discussing Area 51.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like.
Did you know Groot's dad is named Area 51?
I did know that.
Okay. Sorry. Now I'll stop.
I did know that. And he's beautiful and fluffy.
He is.
And Groot turned out even more beautiful and not fluffy.
Correct.
So, therefore, I'm allergic as fuck to him, but it's fine. It's cool. I still love him all the same. Aww. I just break out in hives. I gave him his own song today. You're beautiful. It's Groot. Diving right in. Yeah. Area 51. It's located in Nevada, and it's about 120 miles northwest of Las Vegas. It's near the small towns of Rachel and Hico. Something like that.
Nice.
The pronunciation is something of that nature.
All right.
It's located in like a desert area in southern Nevada. So it's still south. It's just northwest
of Vegas, but still south.
Still south of the state.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's somewhere between the mile markers 29 and 30 of Nevada's extraterrestrial highway or State Highway 375. I feel like that's not as fun.
It's not as fun.
It's stationed on an unmarked dirt road. And there are no buildings that are visible, but the tracks lead to Groom Lake or the Homi Airport.
Okay.
And before World War II... WW2, Roman numerals.
Got it.
The area near Groom Lake was used for silver and lead mining. And once the war began, the military took over this area because it's very remote, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they began conducting research, which was mainly nuclear research and weapons testing.
Awesome.
Yep.
So, we love that.
Yeah. Weapons of destruction.
Right.
And nukes. Mass destruction, should say. So Area 51, it was established in 1955 as part of the Nevada Test and Training Range Complex, which it's a U.S. Air Force base.
Okay.
I feel like the obvious elephant in the room is it's a secret, right?
Clearly.
So why was it a secret?
I'm like, clearly it's a secret since everyone knows about it.
No, but like it was a secret.
Right.
So it was a secret because when the CIA started developing reconnaissance. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, look at me go. Planes during the Cold War. The then CIA director, Richard Bissell Jr., he was like, we need a private base, right, to build and test these prototypes.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1955,
post-World War II.
But I mean, it was a military site at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then it kind of converted, I guess, if you will, to the Air Force Base at this time.
Gotcha.
In 1955. So Richard Bissell and Lockheed aircraft designer Kelly Johnson selected the secluded area at Groom Lake to be the headquarters for this place.
Okay.
Where they were going to build and test these planes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Atomic Energy Commission added the base to the existing map of the Nevada test site and labeled the site as Area 51.
Gotcha. So is it like the 51st nuke testing spot?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know why they...
Or if it's just random.
I don't know why they landed on that.
Okay.
So within 8 months of its being there, the engineers there had developed the U-2 plane, which it soared at about an altitude of 70,000 feet, which
is double.
Really high.
It's double a commercial airline flight, which averages 35,000 feet.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Really high. And really high for that time too, right? That time period. Like we're talking, I guess I don't know what month this is in 1955, but 1955, 1956, right? I feel like that's really
technologically advanced.
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably, right?
Yeah, I'm not an aircraft aficionado.
I'm not either, even in the slightest. But yeah, it was much higher than any other aircraft at this time. It was the highest soaring plane at this point in history.
Cool.
So this allowed at the time pilots to see above the Soviet radar, the missiles and their aircrafts.
Well, that makes sense because they're probably... Their radar is probably about 35,000 feet.
Right. Commercial.
Well, not even commercial, but probably all planes pretty much flew at that.
Yeah.
So if they doubled, and just in case, like the Russians, maybe Soviet, maybe had a little higher range of radar, you know, like maybe they're going 45,000 feet just to make sure that they're getting all of the radar blips and stuff. So if the plane goes 70,000, there's no fucking way that they're going to get it. Got you.
Well, that was until it was shot down by a Soviet anti-air missile.
Oh, well, fuck.
In 1960. And then the CIA began developing the next generation of their spy planes, again, at Area 51. And this was, well, there's like a list of them, but this one in particular was called A-12. And it was a titanium-bodied plane, or it's also Archangel 12.
Okay.
And this is really cool. It had a nearly undetectable radar. It could fly at 2,200 miles per hour.
That's fast.
And get all the way across the continental United States in 70 minutes.
That's
an hour and 10 minutes. Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And it was also, like, it had cameras all along it. And so from the altitude of 90,000 feet.
Holy shit.
They could take pictures of things, right? And these photographs could depict objects that were just 1 foot long from the ground.
That just seems so advanced.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because I feel like our smartphones can't even do that.
Well, yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
I'm like, well, when are we going 90,000 feet? But I mean, you know, it's the 50s.
Well, even from like my damn near 5 foot height, my phone can't capture that stuff. So what the fuck? I am not 90,000 feet in the air. And we're still not getting that good of results. I'm disappointed. We got to have a talk, Apple. So the SR-71 Blackbird and the F-117 Nighthawk stealth fighter were also developed and tested at this site. So now I feel like we need to talk about, like, the reveal of Area 51, right?
Right. Did they have a big party?
That would have been cool, but no. In 2005, a Freedom of Information Act request was filed by Dr. Jeffrey T. Richelson, who was a senior fellow at the George Washington University National Security Archive. So this Freedom of Information Act request was that they wanted information on the CIA's Lockheed U-2 plane reconnaissance program.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I keep saying that right. I'm so proud of myself.
I'm proud of you too.
And then jumping a little bit into the future, August 15th of 2013, this was the first time that the CIA had published the declassified document, which was the first time I'd ever acknowledged Area 51.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did people know about it before 2013? Because I feel like I've heard about it not just in the last 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, people always knew like it was there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a huge mystery that was never talked about, right? And right. So this is the first time that they're like, yeah, I mean, this exists, duh.
Right. Well, it's the CIA.
Yeah.
So that's their job to keep stuff secret.
Right. But they were like, yeah. Yeah, it exists. Like, what do you think? Do you think we're just guarding nothing back there?
Right.
Like, of course this exists, was basically the point of it. So the declassified documents were all about the history of the U-2 and the A-12 Oxcart aerial surveillance programs that were constructed and tested at Area 51. And these documents, they claim the site's secret status was a way to keep the information from the Soviets, rather than everyone thinks they're trying to cover up alien encounters there, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what the big elephant, I guess, is that people think there's aliens there.
Right. Grays.
Yeah, the grays.
Yeah.
So this guy, his name is Benjamin Bradford. He's an American folklorist, a writer, investigator, and a skeptic who's written more than 20 books, which include The Scientific Paranormal Investigation, How to Solve Unexplained Mysteries, Tracking the Chupacabra, The Vampire Beast in Fact, Fiction, and Folklore, Mysterious New Mexico, Miracles, Magic, and Monsters in the Land of Enchantment. And he's also the deputy director at the Skeptical Inquirer magazine, and he has written like many articles surrounding the theories about Area 51. So we're going to be referring to him a lot in this episode.
Okay.
Which I'll let you know every time we're referring to him. And basically, if it's coming from him, it's like a direct quote.
Okay.
Got you. This is all from his interview with Space.com. where I'm grabbing this stuff from.
Okay.
So this is what he had to say about Area 51. The base itself is fairly small, but the restricted area is around over 90,000 acres, partially prevent praying eyes or prying eyes. I'm sorry. Partly to prevent prying eyes and partly because they need to test classified aircrafts. It's mostly conspiracy theorists and media who call it Area 51. To the U.S. government, it's simply the Nevada Test and Training Range, part of the Edwards Air Force Base. So he was saying that just because the base has been acknowledged doesn't mean that, like, you should visit it because it's still very highly secured.
Right.
And there are still, like, legitimate reasons why the government, the military, the big men are keeping it a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another quote from him.
We're keeping it protected because it's not a secret anymore.
Yeah, it's not a secret, but we don't really know what's going on the inside.
I was
going to
say what's going on in there, though, is a secret.
Yeah. The happenings of what's happening.
The happenings of the happening.
The happenings of the happening. Another quote is that the military classifies Area 51 as a military operating area. On the ground, you'll encounter stern signs and armed guards patrolling the fenced perimeters guarded by buried motion sensors, cameras, guards, and so on, plus signs warning that deadly force is authorized.
Wow.
The borders of Area 51 are not fenced, but marked with orange poles and warning signs. He also warned that, like, there's signs that say, like, no trespassing, you're not allowed to take photos, those kinds of things.
Right.
I mean, there are pictures online.
So if you're trying to off somebody, you take them there and play Frisbee?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, you got to go get that. To you.
We are disturbing, aren't we?
Well, I was thinking, how do you lure Catch! Somebody in there? You play Frisbee because they got to go get it.
Right?
Yeah.
I was just trying to get my Frisbee. Boom, boom. So the title Area 51 seems to come from the designation of the base that it had on the Atomic Energy Commission maps. So maybe you're right that it's like the 51st spot or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, like, specify why, and I'm sure that there's not. I didn't do too much digging. Like, I have all the other names here, but, like, how... Well, I know how some of it got its names, but, like, the Area 51 part, I doubt that we would know if there was, like, an Area 49.
Or 50.
Or 50.
Or 52.
I just felt like 49 sounded better to say.
Okay, so you're into the odd numbers.
Very into the odd numbers today. So the area was also given the name Paradise Ranch in an attempt to get Lockheed, which is now Lockheed Martin.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're very familiar with that. There's Lockheed Martin areas not far from us.
Correct.
To draw employees to the base.
So like, they call it Paradise Island?
Paradise Ranch.
Ranch, my bad.
Paradise Ranch. They're like, hey, it's Paradise Ranch. Get over here.
It's paradise.
Come work here. The military base has like a billion unofficial names, but some of them are Paradise Ranch, Watertown, Dreamland Resort, Red Square, The Box, The Ranch, Nevada Test and Training Range, right? Mm-hmm. We've already gone over that one. Detachment 3, Air Force Flight Test Center.
Okay.
And guess the last one.
Area 51.
Woo! Ding, ding, ding. Remember when I was like, not sulfur, because it's going to be too obvious. Yeah, you got that one.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is a trick.
So today the base and the wider Nevada Test and Training Range complex are all a part of the Nevada National Security Site, the NNSS, with the CIA referring to it as the Groom Lake and Homey Airport. And for a long time, like, you weren't able to find any information about, like, where it was actually located online. And now, since 2018, it's visible on Google Maps.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But I mean, once you make something public, in this day and age, it's public.
Yeah, it's very public.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either referred to as the Groom Lake or the Homey Lake when you look at it on
Google Maps.
Aviation Maps, I'm sorry. On Aviation Views. But, like, why is it still so undercover? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Right? And these got to be theories, right? Because nothing's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, kind of. we're really like we're soft launching into the theories.
Okay.
So the testing of new and secretive military aircrafts is probably much for the connection that people give between Area 51 and them seeing UFOs around that area.
Okay.
Especially when considering the term UFO.
Unidentified flying object.
Yeah. Doesn't necessarily refer to aliens. Right. People just give it that connotation.
Yeah.
But it's literally exactly what you just said. But I mean, the term UFO, I feel like in pop culture is referred to aliens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably why it was garnered with some of that association.
Gotcha.
So another quote from Benjamin Radford, our expert on the subject.
Our skeptical expert.
He says, it's true that strange lights and aircrafts can be seen, can sometimes be spotted in the area. So it's an obvious leap to UFOs. But of course, new aircrafts might look identical. The basic flawed premise behind the Area 51 mythology can be boiled down to this. The government won't reveal what's going on there, so it must be something ultra super amazingly secret.
That's a direct quote.
That's a direct quote.
All right.
Yeah, so he thinks there must be something really good, really good happening.
No kidding.
And he also said that what we call Area 51 is only one of the military bases, national laboratories, and government scientific research centers across the country that deal with classified information.
Oh, I'm sure.
Sometimes even, you know, top secret.
Oh, yeah.
No one, like, you can't just be anyone and walk in.
Right. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, you have to be cleared to go through.
Mm-hmm.
He also said that there's no reason to believe that anything UFO related is going on there.
Other than everybody thinks that there is.
Yeah. Okay. Basically.
There's no reason to believe it other than everybody believes it.
Yeah, other than the fact that everyone thinks that that's what's going on. Right. So now we can dive into some mythology about Area 51.
Let's do it.
Some of the theories of Area 51 include the storage, examination, and reverse engineering of crashed alien spacecraft, including material supposedly recovered at Roswell, the study of their occupants, and the manufacture of aircraft based on alien technology.
That does sound pretty far-fetched when you say it like that.
Yeah.
It sounds like a sci-fi novel or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know about Roswell, right?
Mm-hmm. Roswell, New Mexico.
Yeah. I didn't want to spend all the time deep diving into it.
Mm-hmm.
But for those who don't know about it, in 1947, there was an unidentified flying object that landed there, a UFO. We'll talk about what it actually was later.
Okay.
We'll get into that.
Ooh, I'm on pins and needles for that.
So another theory is meetings are joint undertakings with extraterrestrials.
Okay.
The development of exotic energy weapons for a strategic defense initiative, SDI, or other weapons programs.
That sounds more... I mean, I really want to believe the UFO thing because I just want to, but that sounds more reasonable.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think that that's kind of not even really a theory anymore, right? I mean, maybe like the term exotic
okay.
in front of it mm-hmm. is part of like why it's a conspiracy theory about that happening there. But we've already talked about that they were doing
nuclear testing
and weapons mm-hmm. mass destruction, essentially.
Right. So not like, essentially of mass destruction.
No, I was just saying those things, essentially.
Oh, okay.
So that's, yeah, I feel like that's not that far-fetched.
No.
The development of weather control.
Yeah, okay. Well, sorry, because I'm thinking about how they seed clouds and whatnot.
Yeah.
So.
Perhaps.
That happens.
The development of time travel and teleportation technology.
That would be so cool.
That would be sick, right? Yeah. You know, none of us are getting our hands on it.
No.
Well, have you seen that theory about like Keanu Reeves living like way back in the day that he was somebody that was famous back in the day? I don't know. I'll have to find the TikTok and I'll send it to you.
Okay.
The development of exotic propulsion systems related to the Aurora program. I have no idea what the Aurora program is.
Okay.
I didn't want to spend too much time on that because I'm trying to keep these pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just theories, right? But we're going to deep dive a little harder into some of these theories.
Okay.
Activities related to a shadowy one world government or the Majestic 12 organization.
Are you going to tell us what the Majestic 12 organization is?
No.
Okay.
I didn't look into it.
All right.
I wanted to spend our time on aliens.
No, that's fine.
So Sergeant Anderson told the Reno Evening Gazette, which is now known as the Reno Gazette Journal, about spotting a UFO back in 1959, which the outlet also reported that at the Nellis Air Force Base, which is located about 130 miles south of Area 51, that they had also been receiving reports in the past 3 weeks of UFO sightings.
So a lot of reports.
A lot of reports are coming in. So those reports came just a few years after the rumors of the UFO crashing in Roswell in 1947, right? Mm-hmm. Which the Roswell Army Airfield later said that it was a weather balloon.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. Well, they were done like testing and stuff. That's what it was.
Oh, it absolutely 100% was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's what it was.
Right. Okay, gotcha. But it was still unidentified to some people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they began the Air Force like investigating these claims of the UFO sighting in 1947, which later became known as the Project Blue Book in 1952, which then this Project Blue Book ended in 1969. And the Air Force, they had looked into over 12,000 claims within their time doing Project Blue Book.
Yeah, it was like, that's a really long time.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a lot.
Yeah.
Which I definitely think there's things out there, but we can dive into that later.
Yeah.
So Area 51 really kicked off with its alien associations after, in 1989, a man who claimed to have worked there, his name was Robert Lazar, or Lazar, I don't know. he gave an interview with the Las Vegas news station reporter George Knapp, in which he claimed that Area 51 housed and studied alien spacecrafts and that his job was to recreate the technology that they were using for the military's use.
Okay.
Which he told the reporter, right, that he had viewed autopsy photographs of aliens inside of Area 51.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just like, how credible is he?
Well, he was discredited very soon after.
Okie dokie.
Because according to his school records, he never went to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT.
So he's a fraud.
Or the California Institute of Technology.
Fraud.
Because he claimed he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't. At the time, though, the engineers at Area 51 were studying and recreating advanced aircrafts, but just aircrafts that, like, were here from other countries.
Okay.
Or, like, I don't know, if, like, they'd shot down enemy planes, right, and then brought them there.
Right. To study them.
To study them.
Figure out what they were doing, what their technology was.
Yeah. But these, like, weren't autopsy falling from photos. The sky. Or they were. But, like, I'm trying to figure out how to say this.
They're not alien.
They're not alien. They're not coming from outer space.
There you go.
They're coming from when another nation's plane takes off the ground into the air and then somehow gets on the U.S. grounds. So he did an interview, though, in 2019 on a podcast. I'm not sure what the podcast was, which inspired this crazy freaking event. OK, we're going to dive all into this event. It's fucking nuts.
OK, I can't wait.
It's called Storm Area 51.
Oh, shit.
So it started out as a prank on socials, which it got very out of hand when 3.5 million people expressed interest in attending an
Holy
event.
Holy shit.
Which was organized by a 20-year-old. His name is Maddie Roberts, which she was a student from Bakersfield in California.
Whoa. I'm sorry. I'm just like thinking of 3.5 million people descending on Area 51.
Fuck. I mean, it's 90 acres, but still fuck. Yeah. Not somewhere I'd want to be, that's
no
for sure.
No kidding. Talk about a crowd.
Yeah. So on July 11th of 2019, an anonymous Facebook event was created that was called Storm Area 51. They can't stop all of us.
That is true, especially if there are 3.5 million of them.
Right? Which it obviously the plan that suggests in the name was to, you know,
to storm
Area 51. They can't stop all of us. The aim was obviously to be like, we know about these aliens. And the tagline of this event was, see them aliens. So this event was scheduled for September 20th, 2019 at 3 a.m. And over 1.5 million people on Facebook on this event, like, responded going.
Oh, fuck.
And Jackson Barnes, who says he created the event as a joke. He like talked about his plans to invade Area 51 on an interview. And he said that his plan involves Monster energy drinks.
Yeah.
Kyle's.
What's Kyle's?
He says it's the internet name for white men and boys who have anger issues and punch drywall.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So Kyle's, got you, like Karen's.
Yeah, but I've heard them as Kevin's.
Oh, I've heard Kyle's.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Okay.
But
and if I was like, is it some kind of a drug or?
And Naruto running? Naruto running?
Naruto?
Running, which is inspired by Japanese anime shows.
So probably Naruto.
I don't know.
I'm not an animator.
Naruto.
Okay.
Sound it out. That's me gently clapping for syllables. So he wrote on Facebook to like apologize, I guess, if you will. This is what he wrote. He said, then the rock throwers will throw pebbles at the inevitable resistance. We don't want to hurt them. We just want to annoy them enough not to shoot the Kyles as often. And then he also wrote, P.S. Hello, U.S. government. This is a joke. I do not actually intend to go ahead with this plan. I just thought it would be funny and get some thumbsy upsies on the internet.
Or 1.5 million people saying, yeah, I'm going.
Yeah, I'll be there. So then on July 12th, 2019, Air Force spokeswoman Laura McAndrew said, Area 51 is an open training range for the U.S. Air Force, and we would discourage anyone from trying to come into the area where we train American armed forces. The U.S. Air Force always stays ready to protect America and its assets.
Yeah.
That sounds like a serious, like,
stay the fuck away.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to say threat, but
I
like,
think it's a warning.
I think the threat is what the event, like, this is her response to the threat of this event taking place.
Right. I think it's a warning.
Yeah. And then on August 9th of 2019, the Alien Stock Festival, a festival which celebrates aliens, was set to take place from September 19th to the 22nd in Rachel, Nevada.
Mm-hmm, which is right there.
Yeah, right. Like, it's closest town, right? Mm-hmm. And it says, we're aiming to establish something unique here. A meeting place where all the believers come out to the desert and dive into a world full of music, arts, and camping under the stars. And then on August 20th, officials in Lincoln County, Nevada, where this is all located, voted to pre-sign an emergency declaration in preparation for everyone that was going to, like, storm the grounds, essentially. Shit. Right?
Yeah.
And then on September 10th, the organizers of this festival canceled it, saying that there was critical infrastructure needed that was not provided for the event. Instead, people are encouraged to attend the Area 51 celebration in Las Vegas, which then on the same day, September 10th of 2019, two Dutchmen were arrested at the site near Area 51. The men told the police that they didn't see the no trespassing signs and they wanted to take a look at the facility, which then they later pled guilty to trespassing and illegal parking.
And you're getting a parking ticket.
Right. So it said that in the end, about 6,000 people made it to the low-key summer event and partook in some activities like hatchet throwing. Bud Light made an alien-themed beer.
Nice.
Yeah. And their security wasn't challenged at Area 51. I guess people were pretty cordial, some of them. But about 200 people did show up outside of the gates of Area 51, like, trying to raid it. Mm-hmm. Two people were arrested. And according to the Lincoln County Sheriff's, sorry, there was one alcohol-related arrest and a Canadian citizen for indecent exposure. And then a woman, she was coming close to crossing and then she was detained and then released at, like, there.
Okay.
Which Benjamin Radford, again, he had this to say about it. It began as a joke, but some people took it seriously and began planning to actually, well, it's not clear what, but hang out near the entrance and have fun. The tiny town of Rachel braced for huge crowds in a music festival that never happened. And he said it was basically like a small scale fire festival, right? Mm-hmm. Because people like actually traveled in for this.
Right. And probably were camping and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then in 1996, the documentary called Dreamland, which it included an interview with a 71-year-old mechanical engineer who claimed to be a former employee at Area 51 during the 50s.
Okay.
He said, so his claims included that he had worked on a flying disc simulator, which had been based on the disc originating from a crashed extraterrestrial craft, and that it was used to train pilots.
Okay.
He also claimed to have worked with an extraterrestrial being named J-Rod and described J-Rod as a telepathic translator. I kind of like J-Rod. I like the idea of this. Except for if he starts like thinking my thoughts out loud, I might be upset with J-Rod.
Right.
So in 2004, Dan Burisk, or Dan Crane, not really sure what his name is.
Some guy.
Yeah, his first name's definitely Dan, right? Like, I feel like that if it's like one or the other, well, Dan is in both. So we call him Dan BC. Combine both of them. He claimed to have worked on cloning alien viruses at Area 51. And he also said that he worked alongside this alien called J-Rod, which then Dan's scholarly credentials were like very much debated because he was apparently working as a Las Vegas parole officer in 1989. Well, he said he was also earning a PhD at the State University of New York.
Oh my gosh. That's why I was like, can this be corroborated?
Well, so clearly. Who really knows what the fuck's going on here?
Right. How do people like get all this credibility and like, not just in this case, and I'll just stop because we're trying to keep it short, but like how people are like, yeah, I'm a doctor, and they go and do fucking surgery, and they never went to medical school.
Right.
Or like,
they bought their degree online, right? Printed it out on some nice paper they went and bought from the store.
Yeah. Fuck. It's so crazy.
It's nuts.
Well, and especially to make yourself that public. That's what I mean by it. You know, like you can pretend to be anybody, but to pretend to be something you're not and then go on a podcast or like make an interview, like.
Right.
Yeah.
I saw alien bodies. I saw pictures of them.
Right.
Ugh. Well, I'm sure if they could take pictures from 90,000 feet and make them very clear, there was probably some version of Photoshop then. So more from our buddy, Benjamin Radford. So he said a lot of the legend has been fueled by hoaxers like Robert Lazer, who appeared in the 1980s telling a story to TV stations that he worked there and saw alien bodies and crashing flying saucers firsthand. It got a lot of attention, but it was later revealed that he fabricated not only his employment at Nellis, the Air Force Base, which is south of there, but indeed his entire background. Almost nothing of what he said was true.
Awesome.
Yeah. Fucking A.
Right? I got nothing.
So, nevertheless, with all of the high-tech flights that were out of Area 51, which included more than 2,800 takeoffs by the A-12 aircraft we talked about before, the Archangel 12,
right,
which I think is a super sick name.
It's so cool.
It's like not that hard to believe that people would think that they'd be seeing UFOs, right?
Right.
Because the bodies of them, like a lot of them are titanium bodies, right? Mm-hmm. And then like with the sun's reflection beaming off of them or the moon's reflection, like whatever, which is a reflection of the sun. I don't want to talk about it. Like, you could definitely be like, oh my God, is that a UFO? And especially at the speeds that they were traveling, right?
Right.
Like, until they, like, declassified these documents, people didn't know what the fuck was going on. Right. Like, what these planes were. Which now, you know, there's, like, the recorded times of every single time they traveled. Which people were like, I was looking in the sky at 8:05 on January 12th, 1971. They could be seeing the A-12.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about how you can visit.
Okay.
The Nevada National Security Site offers monthly tours that depart from the National Atomic Testing Museum in Vegas. Reservations open up months in advance and fill up extremely fast.
Oh, I'll bet.
So pre-planning is key. While the visit doesn't offer the chance to actually tour Area 51 itself, you get like a sense of the Martian-esque terrain.
Okay.
And it says you tour more than 250 miles of the Nevada National Security Site that are generally off limits to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also visit the National Atomic Testing Museum in Vegas, like we just talked about,
mm-hmm.
or the Atomic Nevada exhibit at the Nevada State Museum in Las Vegas to get a look into the history of Area 51. They also offer tours of Area 51, which is piloted by an actual ex-Air Force captain, which goes along the extraterrestrial highway in a luxury car. They offer, these are day trips that launch Wednesday through Sunday out of Vegas, which include lunch, snacks, personalized photography tips, and more Area 51 stories.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so all I got.
So it's touristy.
It's touristy for sure. They've definitely bought into the conspiracy theories by calling it that, or the conspiracy theories were like continually being adapted because like they called it the extraterrestrial highway and like all these things.
Yeah, people just stack on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know which came first, the theories or the name of the highway.
Got nothing.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, that's pretty cool,
though. Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Exactly. Yeah, that's pretty cool, Daph. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks.
I mean, it's definitely that. Like a history lesson.
Yeah.
But I definitely believe there are aliens out there. It's actually crazy. I kind of wanted to include something on it, but then I was like, I'm not going to do that right now. About the fact that it was either like late last year or the top of this year that the government was like, yeah, we know about aliens. You guys are dumbasses. Of course they're aliens.
Right.
Which is like, duh. The universe is way too big for there not to be things outside of Earth.
Right. Exactly. There has to be life out there besides us.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got for you today.
I like it. Thank you. And we're keeping it shortish and sweetish.
Shortish and Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. You can follow us on the gram at That's Disturbing Podcast. Send us a case request form, thatsdisturbingpodcast.com. Or if you feel so inclined and lame, send us a Gmail, because it's pretty lame to not go to the website and fill out the case request form if you're going to send a case request. You can send it to thatsdisturbingpodcast@gmail.com. Bye-bye.